step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast. It's our live Monday Night Football show. I'm going to go ahead and get the link shared out to everybody. I see Shadi and Samantha are already in the audience. They should be jumping in shortly. I'm going to, like I said, send out invitations both here on the Halftime app and out to Twitter in general. Everybody is out there having a great time so far on Halftime tonight. Shadi, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic.
How are you, Ty?
I'm fantastic. Absolutely ready to get locked in. Samantha, how are
you? Good.
I'm
good.
Awesome. So while we're getting rolled up here, let's talk some breaking news. And, you know, breaking a few hours ago, Mike Mayock informed that he is not returning. So that kind of nukes my little pet theory of he will be maybe the guy driving the bus on the hire, because he will not be on the bus. He has been left at the bus stop. Shadi, I know you tweeted, you know, Mayock's a talented evaluator and you know, draft picking and free agent signing, like, it's not on him that this project is not where it ought to be at this point by ownership's objectives. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you think about the job Mike Mayock did and what his future?
Yeah, if Mike Mayock has one problem, since I've really known him and have known, like, a lot of people in fellow draft circles who know him and talk to him and he trusts, and people I know in the Raiders organization who sort of, you know, don't really say exactly what's going on but will, like, characterize the situation. You know, John Gruden did not watch a ton of college football. John Gruden, much like when he was at ESPN, would come in at the, you know, tail end of things, and he would have watched, you know, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the big games of the week, the ones that we all watch because we're fans, and he would have his opinions of who the team should draft. And when you look at the team's higher round draft picks, you can see John Gruden's hand along those sorts of things. Whereas Mike Mayock has always been a film junkie. And does he sort of have a predilection towards those blue blood schools? Yeah, I think so. But I know for a fact, I would put dollars, cents, my mortgage, my car payment, I would put it all on the fact, like, the guys like Nate Hobbs, the guys that are really contributing to the Vikings, mid-round, late-round picks, who have played so well for the Vikings, those are Mike Mayock. And I've had agents, I've had people in the building tell me that when it's second, third day of the draft and we've run out of the people that John Gruden knows, he's got the final say, but Mike Mayock is the one running the board. And so when you look at a lot of these different things, like a lot of the issues, the bad characters they've brought in, the missed first-round draft picks, everyone I know says that's Gruden. And I don't know that for a fact. I'm not sitting in the draft room. A lot of people, though, have told me that that was Gruden and the mid-round to late-round stuff was Mike Mayock. And those picks were typically, much like when Mike Mayock was on TV and we saw his work, we saw that he was a talented evaluator. I believe, similar to what you had said about your prediction, the driving the bus prediction, I think that there was a discussion there. I think the reason Mike Mayock is out of that building is him and Mark Davis were not on the same page about how this organization could move forward. And to me, the way this looks, this seems pretty amicable and pretty both sides decided this was not a good thing for this marriage to continue.
Okay, so what happens with Mike Mayock then? Samantha, supposing Mayock is not sliding back into TV, that he wants to keep being an evaluator, that he's put enough, obviously not good tape. He's not out there running around on the field, but a good draft pick. If league people know the second day, third day, that's Mike Mayock's work. Is that enough where you think there are teams that are looking for GMs that are going to go, hey, look, I'll jump in on that. I'll have some Mike Mayock. I'll have him. Or do you think he is heading back for the booth, heading back for studio shows, heading back for Twitter until somebody else?
I think there's a lot more to being a GM than evaluating late round talent. So I don't know that people are necessarily going to be all over Mike Mayock. I also find it a little hard to believe that this guy agreed to stay in that job as long as he did, even though it was only a couple of years and his only role was to evaluate late round talent. So it's not that I'm trying to say anything bad about Mike Mayock or say, hey, he's just as culpable. I don't think that's true at all, but I don't know that we have any real indication that he is good at this job. Like, is he a good talent evaluator in terms of the draft? Absolutely. We knew that before he took the job. He was very good at what he did, certainly. But there's just too much that goes into that job, a lot of which didn't go well in LA. And I know the temptation is to blame Gruden. And hey, looking at Gruden, the odds are pretty decent that if you see something you don't like, you could probably trace it back to Gruden. But I think the problem with Mayock is there's also just nothing there that suggests that he should be. I mean, I wouldn't hire this guy as a GM, I'll be honest. I think there are a lot of people out there who are very good at evaluating talent who can also demonstrate that they're good at a lot of other things, too, who don't have stuff like this to answer for where they would have to explain it. I think he'll end up back in the booth or back on Twitter, as you said, wherever. And I think that's the right role for him. I'm not saying he can't be a GM. I'm just saying I don't know that there's enough evidence to suggest that he should be.
All right, so then let's say that the okay, if Mark Davis and Mike Mayock do not agree on the direction forward for the Raiders, my question becomes, and it sounds like they are out there interviewing head coach candidates as well, does that mean that that Davis and Mayock disagreed on head coaching strategies as well? Does that mean Mike Mayock was like, hey, let's keep Rich Bisaccia, he's doing a good job, and Mark Davis is like, no? I'm fascinated by this idea.
Again, with none of us in the building, I don't think we can say for sure, but to me, that's what it seems like. To me, it seems like when the season was winding down, they didn't win that playoff game. It seems to me either Mark Davis had it in his mind from the get-go that these were interim things, that we were going to start moving forward and start, peeling back on that organization and start rebuilding things. Or it was, hey, there was a conversation either last night or this morning or even a while back that said, hey, what do you think we should do with Rich? Who do you think should be our head coach? And because they right away today started looking at new head coaching candidates, started asking before Mike Mayock was even out of the building, started asking to interview GMs, which is just super unprofessional, by the way. Like, that's just, I get the NFL is not a 100% like a Fortune 500 workplace or a Fortune 100 workplace, but that's just not even the way things are usually done in the NFL. I think there had to have been some discussion at some point about the future of the organization, and it was made pretty clear that Mark Davis and Mike Mayock didn't agree. And some of that's just natural because, remember, Mike Mayock came in with John Gruden and at the behest of John Gruden, and because he was buddies with John Gruden. So I slightly disagree with Samantha just because I absolutely think he could end up back in the booth. He could start doing Notre Dame games tomorrow and hit the ground running on NBC. No one would care. Like, he would do a great job and he wouldn't have to,
Wait, that's exactly what I said.
Anything. Right, that's what I'm saying. He could absolutely do that, but I don't think he wants that. I think there are plenty of jobs in football. Maybe it's not another GM role, but it sounds to me like he worked his entire career, first as a player and then in the booth to sort of get back in the football world. And I think once you've had that taste of it, I think he could have always stayed in the booth. He would not have moved to the Raiders if he wanted to be out of football, out of the front office. And so I think whether that's, director of player personnel at Boston College, his alma mater, or whether that's, director of something somewhere, like he played for the Steelers. Could he go there tomorrow? Yeah, they'd invite him there tomorrow. I think he absolutely could end up back in the booth, but I think he sticks around in football. I think he's having way too much fun doing it from everything I hear. His daughter says that he's having the time of his life and he didn't want to leave. So I just think there's a job for him in football. And so I think he sticks around the game somewhere, whether that's, you know, up in the booth or whether that's, not in the booth at broadcasting. If he's like up in the booth as like an analyst somewhere, or if he's in the front office somewhere, I think he sticks around and sort of rebuilds his image in the post-Gruden era. And I think the Raiders are going to go a vastly different direction because they tried this old school football technique. And I think every time the Raiders hire a coach, it seems like they go a decade back. And I think Mark Davis maybe finally figured out that it's time to start doing things in the 21st century.
Oh, I'm sure he'd like to stick around. I just don't know that I believe anyone will hire him. But I actually thought it was the other way around with Bisaccia initially. I wondered if maybe it was Mark Davis who wanted to keep him and Mike Mayock who didn't. It looks like that's probably not the case now. It's going to be a tough sell with, you know, the players out there stumping for this guy. But, you know, Mark Davis does what Mark Davis wants. So we'll see.
All right, we will see. This is Three and Out, your national NFL podcast. And resetting because we're getting back going here. It is our weekly live show that we always do. Our key takeaways are already up in the feed. We already broke down everything that we thought was huge about this wild card weekend. We already talked our reaction to all those games, a lot of the amazing moments. I see Taco Sriracha is in the audience. Hi, Taco came up with an incredible idea. We talked about on halftime over the week, on the actual app, chatting about that stuff. All 32 NFL quarterbacks in a Hunger Games. Who you got? I think there's a lot of great discussion. We batted it around a little bit, the Three and Out crew. We are going to do an episode about that, but we are in the thick of the playoffs right now, so I think that is prime, like, off-season material. I think we got to do some research. I think all of us need to get like, some dossiers together, some scouting reports, and propose this. I think we could do at least an hour show on the Hunger Games. But the NFL has its sort of own version of the Hunger Games, and that is single elimination playoffs. Right now, the Rams just scored. They are up 14-0 on the Cardinals. We're in the second quarter right now. And of course, this is kind of how we do it. The game's already rolling. We have a flavor for what's going on. We keep talking football. We keep taking your questions. And then we end up going through halftime, and you guys take center stage on the halftime app during the halftime of the actual game, and we keep going from there. So, Shadi, let's say the Raiders do go in a completely different direction. What kind of direction do you think they go? If old school football heads didn't get it done, and we're not keeping Rich Bisaccia, then what direction are...
There's two things that we kind of know about the Raiders franchise in general. The first is that they're probably going to make a mistake here. Just the way they do things is never quite the right way. They've made probably, let's round some numbers here. They've probably made like 7 or 8 coaching hires in the last couple of decades, and one or two of them have been okay. The other thing we know about them, and so if I had to like read a tea leaf or... throw a dart in the wind here. They also have always been really good about hiring minority coaches and minority front office guys. And I think there is something to be said for if Mark Davis sort of wants to move ahead with like a brand new, like, you know, try to find the next John Gruden or try to find the next Art Shell or try to find the next, you know, first version of Art Shell, not the second version of Art Shell he hired. If they're trying to move forward that way, but they're going to probably make a mistake and they're probably going to not have the money to hire like the top guy that they want. Like they're probably not in with Brian Flores because Brian Flores has taken like 10 different interviews right now. They're probably not in with like the Brian Dables of the world or even the Eric Bieniemies of the world. They're probably like Pep Hamilton level, like someone who's not going to get a head coaching job anyway, like any other way, and so isn't going to ask for just a ton of money because the Raiders, an old school football family that don't have a separate source of income, don't have a ton of money. So like I could see, again, this is just a dart in the wind, I could see like a Pep Hamilton, you know, someone who's not even offensive coordinator, who's like interviewing for offensive coordinator jobs. I could see him like being brought in and being like, hey, that's an example of a type of guy who I think, or an Anthony Lynn. The Lions defensive coordinator.
Aaron Glenn.
Aaron Glenn. Someone like Aaron Glenn, or frankly, for that matter, Anthony Lynn also would be a good example. You know, I think a minority coach who otherwise is not going to get a head coaching job, they sort of settle for someone that they can pay, that they don't have to pay a ton of money, back a Brinks truck up to, and they end up getting someone who, quote unquote, is a leader of men, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because I don't think they can go out and get the Brian.
Samantha, who do you like to see? Go ahead. If you want to jump in, who do you like to see as a potential fit? Like, assume you've got Derek Carr, and then ... as a building block of...
For the coach, you mean?
Yeah, for the coach. Over, like, is there a coach, GM, head Perry? But, like, I think coach-wise, let's just... Yeah, who do you think coach-wise is the best fit, or who they might pop?
Well, I don't think the Jim Harbaugh rumors are going to play out. I keep seeing that floating around, and that just doesn't feel likely to me. I think there's going to be a cost issue there, for one thing, that's not viable. But it keeps showing up and showing up and showing up, but I don't think that's practical. I agree with Shadi, well, in two ways. First of all, I think they're going to get it wrong. That would be number one.
Yeah.
And number two, yeah, I mean, I could see them going out and getting a minority candidate. I mean, whatever else is wrong with the Raiders, that they have been way better than almost anyone else in that regard. I just don't think they're going to pick the right person. I mean, there's like a lot of guys out there who would be outstanding head coaches who are in that pool, and the Raiders will probably pick the one that has no business being a head coach, because I think there's some issues there where it's sort of the idea supersedes the practical application of it. And there's no reason you couldn't do both things, but it's the Raiders, and we just know they're going to screw it up, right? But, I mean, I guess that we give them some credit for doing what a lot of teams aren't willing to do, which is go out there and explore all of the available talent, not just the available talent that looks like the guys who were the available talent 50 years ago. But will they get the right person? I doubt it. And that's before we even get into the whole, well, are you going to do a weird thing again where you bring in a coach and you tell him, don't worry, you're in control of everything. And then you're like, maybe you should bring in somebody to help you out and be the GM. And yeah, I mean, there's just no way this goes anywhere.
I will go back on what I had said before, because the Raiders have typically in the past, like, gone for like something from a decade ago. Jim Caldwell is actually another great name for this job, because, again, a guy who probably, you know, he's interviewing for a couple of jobs. He's probably not going to get one. He actually took a year off a couple of years ago because he just wasn't physically able to, you know, perform the duties of an assistant job. But he says he's good now. He's been taking interviews. I could absolutely see Jim Caldwell being the head coach of the Raiders for like the next 2 or 3 years. You know, with the idea that he brings in a younger assistant to sort of take that helm.
That's an interesting fit. Let's go. We've got quite a bit of talk in the chat. Now, we did talk extensively about Mike McCarthy already on the key takeaways up in the feed. You go to 3outpod.com. It's there. Samantha took a big old victory lap because she has been calling this. And of course, you know, None of us were super enthused about Mike McCarthy. None of us super trusted Mike McCarthy to land this plane and get the Cowboys a playoff win and be the guy that, you know, got Jerry Jones past the divisional round without Jimmy Johnson or all of Jimmy Johnson's players on the field for him. But I think it's a pretty interesting thing. The other point that Samantha brought up, and I want to kick it around a little bit because you guys are, Taco Strasha said, you know, I want a full revamp of the Dallas staff. Should everybody go? If you're getting rid of Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore, you know, has a hand in the offensive play calling, has a hand in the offensive play design, has a hand in the preparation, where they got just absolutely housed in the preparation because San Francisco absolutely had their number for basically the whole first half. And then if that happens, what route does Dallas go? Because it's one thing when you're the Raiders and you've got a quarterback and you've got some good players, and this is, you know, this is going to be more about keeping the fans interested than really taking a Super Bowl team to the Super Bowl. The Cowboys, you're trying to bring a Super Bowl team to the Super Bowl, and those coaches are not thick on the ground. You know, Stephen Jones said today he's very confident Mike McCarthy comes back, but I'm not so sure. And if the whole staff comes back intact and one of these two coordinators doesn't somehow get hired elsewhere, I just don't see how reloading and re-racking with these guys.
I just can't imagine a scenario where it would make sense. Like, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Why would it be any different? Especially in the head coaching capacity. Mike McCarthy is not young, and he is certainly not a person who adapts well, no matter what he says about, I looked at the analytics that one time while I was taking my sabbatical. No, this is not a person who is going to evolve here. You have seen Mike McCarthy and what Mike McCarthy does. The other is a little different, but as I was saying earlier on the Key Takeaway show, that Kellen Moore, I can't, if I had an interview scheduled with Kellen Moore right now, I'd cancel it. But then again, I've been out on Kellen Moore for like half the season, so I don't think he's got it. Dan Quinn I feel a little differently about, but I don't know that I think Dan Quinn should be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. That doesn't make sense either, but this team is a problem. Because as much as Cowboys fans want to say, oh, everybody wants to coach the Cowboys, what an honor, there are a lot of people out there, particularly people who do things like successfully coach professional football teams, who don't want to deal with Jerry Jones, who don't want that kind of meddling issue with ownership. And I don't care how much power he ceded to Steven and that Steven is more reasonable. It's not that attractive of a job. It's attractive in the sense that, yeah, there's a lot of talent on the roster, but talent's going to top out sooner than later. And so far, it's not gelling. I don't know if you upend the entire staff there. I don't know what you would get. Can you do better than Mike McCarthy? Sure, because that's not that hard. But there's not really a scenario where you retain the coordinators and fire the head coach. I mean, they're not Dick LeBeau. We're not going to do that. So I don't really see that happening unless they give the job to Dan Quinn or Kellen Moore or something, which seems like a terrible, terrible idea. So I don't know. I think this is going to be tough. In some ways, I think this is a harder job to fill than the Raiders job and certainly the other jobs that are available as well, like Minnesota. I mean, you can make the argument for Jacksonville really in a weird way.
I guess I agree with everything Samantha said. I also just think there is still, within NFL circles, a fair amount of reverence for the star. Like, this goes back to, like, is, you know, pre-Harbaugh, was Michigan a good job? It wasn't. Like, you can't recruit SEC talent, blah, blah, blah. Like, is Notre Dame a good job? No, it's not. For, like, 20,000 reasons. But it's Notre Dame. Like, but it's Michigan. You know, it's Dallas. Like, it's the same reason Green Bay is always going to be a good job. Like, even if Green Bay loses, you know, every single game for the next 10 seasons, go through 20 head coaches, you will still have a fair amount of, like, Midwestern cradle of coaches sort of people who all went to Miami of Ohio or wherever that will salivate at the chance of getting to lead the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think the same thing with Dallas. It's not everybody. It's not you. It's not me. Like, I could not care less about the star. But there are just so many storied names that went through that franchise. So many coaches, like, trees have branched through that franchise that I think I'm almost going to come at it from the opposite angle. Like, you stick with Mike McCarthy because there's no one to back a Brinks truck up for. Like, as many times as we talk about, like, who the head coaching candidates are, like, if Sean Payton was available, like, yeah, if I knew Sean Payton was going to leave, you know, if he was a quote-unquote coaching free agent, Jerry Jones would get him in a heartbeat, and he would absolutely have the ability to go get him because he would write him a blank check, and Sean Payton would accept that blank check. If, you know, Sean McVay were available, same sort of thing. There's no one like that, though. There's no, like, Brian Dable's not that guy. Brian Flores is not that guy. You know, even Kellen Moore is not that guy. If there was that guy, I think Jerry Jones would have a much quicker trigger. But it really does seem like, hey, you had one of the top defenses in the league. You had one of the top offenses in the league. And you can convince yourselves. Now, I agree with Samantha. I agree that this is a problem that is not fixable. Because at the end of the day, these are systemic things with Mike McCarthy that have happened for a decade. But at the end of the day, I think you convince yourself that these are tweaks that you can make, not wholesale changes. And I think even if you end up having one of the coordinators leave or both the coordinators leave, I think you just say, you know, Mike McCarthy built, we said it 2 weeks in a row, this was the best overall team in the NFL. Top 10 in DVOA, offense, defense, and special teams. Are they ever going to get done in the playoffs? I doubt it. But I think you convince yourselves if you're Jerry and Stephen Jones, like, they built a juggernaut. They just have to figure out how to get over that last hump, and they will go down with this ship.
All right, let's, okay, I was going to address, Taco Sriracha has been in the chat just freaking out about Brian Daboll leaving, and don't talk about it, and don't admit it, and don't say anything about it. And I don't know, guys, should we talk about it while they're not here? Or should we wait till they come back to talk about how Brian Daboll is absolutely going to get coaching jobs somewhere else in the league this year?
Well, since he asked, why don't we wait for him?
Okay. All right. In the meantime, let's talk a little bit about the game itself. Again, right now 14-0. Has anything to this point surprised you guys?
Not really. I was hoping that Arizona was going to come out, like, swinging in this one.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what it needed to be for them. I think the Rams were in a position, I mean, in some ways, this game's kind of a toss-up, but I did think the Rams were more in a position where they could come out and kind of play their game and do what they've been doing and probably be okay as long as they weren't being challenged too much. I think Arizona needed to come out early and make a statement. I think they're a team that plays much better from ahead than from behind. And this ain't it. I mean, they just look really, really flat, which is kind of how they've looked the last couple of weeks of the regular season as well. So if the Rams were down a couple of scores, I think I'd feel like, okay, you know, like, they're capable of coming back. We may have a game here. This is, I mean, it's starting to feel like a small margin that's, I don't want to say insurmountable because we're so early in the game, but, like, I don't love what I'm seeing right now from Arizona at all.
Yeah, there's going to be a ton of talk about, you know, Matthew Stafford is out-dueling Kyler Murray. Like, that's not what's happening. The offensive and defensive line for Los Angeles is just absolutely dominating at the point of attack on both sides of the ball, and it's ugly. Arizona cannot win this way. Arizona cannot win when their guys up front on both offense and defense are being absolutely housed by the opposite team. And so when I'm just, you know, as we're doing this, I'm like scrolling through Twitter and seeing people's reactions to the game. And it's just, you know, Cliff Kingsbury can't drop an offense to save his life. And this isn't Texas Tech. And it's like, what offense are you going to drop that you're losing five battles up front and you're still able to do what you want to do? Like, maybe it's a duck and chuck if you've got Nuke Hopkins, but they don't have Nuke Hopkins. So what do you do when you're losing every single individual battle? There's no way to scheme yourself out of it. There's no, you know, if you reversed these two and put Sean McVay in this situation, there is no chance that Sean McVay is scheming his way out of this. This is just domination by the Rams. And the question is whether or not they can keep it up, because this is a team that has done this for spurts this season, but there's also been plenty of times, including against the Cardinals, where they just haven't looked this good.
All right, this is Three and Out, your national NFL podcast, live on our usual Monday night show. We've got Cardinals-Rams. Weirdly, this is the second time we've done Cardinals-Rams Monday Night Football live this year. I'm going to throw to break, but don't go anywhere. We're going to come right back. I'm just doing this because this does go up in the feed, and I need a spot to put the commercials. So we're going to do that. Stay right here, literally in 5 seconds. I will be back here on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, we're back on Three and Out. You're going to ask the NFL podcast. If you're listening in the podcast feed, well, then you probably just heard some commercials. But you are listening live. You did not. Lucky you. You are getting straight up Three and Out live tonight. Cardinals and Rams. And guys, I just pushed the wrong button on my remote. And I have lost the feed for a second, and I'm trying to get it back, and it's telling me this channel is unavailable right now. Sorry about that. So if something amazing is happening right now, I am super missing it, and I apologize. Let's
potential safety right now, actually. The Cardinals could be about to take a safety.
Oh, just boy.
Just putting that out there. Let's see what... Oh, almost... And yeah, that's a pick six on the two. Oh, tie.
Wow.
It was amazing. So, and this was, this is how my picks this week are going, because my entire pick of the Cardinals in this game was predicated around Matthew Stafford doing something like that. And Kyler Murray just did the thing that Stafford was supposed to do. Like,
this is
how the game is going for the Cardinals. Matthew Stafford is good for like one or two boneheaded plays just like this. And he literally underhanded it to Long Jr.
Hey, speaking of picks, guys, in my pick and pull, if the Rams go on to win this, I got every game right this week. This has never happened to me before, ever. I'm actually really bad at this normally, so really bad.
And that's
somehow
impressive.
I got them all right this time. If the Rams can hang on here, which it's about to be 21-0, probably I think they're going to be okay.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because this does have, this is football. This is one of the things I think the game changing to match what the analytics say and what advanced football information says that coaches should do also has changed some of the way that the game is, right? So I think there's a lot more volatility in the game, especially with more passing. You know, since that 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 passing boom, you remember, we don't talk about it that much, but there was a few years in there where like literally every quarterback that started all 16 games was throwing for 4,000 yards, and then 5, 6, 7 of them every year were throwing for 5,000 yards. It's kind of like, whoa, you know, this is a totally different thing. Part of that also has a lot more points getting scored, and a lot more points getting scored at the end of both halves, which is when scoring is typically clustered anyway, but it's even more so. And we've seen a couple of pretty big comebacks already. Obviously the 49ers went up 13-0. We've seen a couple other ones, but we also so far this playoff year, the super wild card weekend, have seen one team start off running away with it and continue to run away with it. Now I gotta think, correct me if I'm wrong here, guys, if any team can come back from this with Kyler and Cliff, air raid offense, like the Cardinals have to be able to get back in this game, right?
I mean, do they have the talent to do it? Sure. Do they have the moxie to do it? I don't know. I mean, we're not really seeing them with a lot of, like, never say die, come from behind, we never give up kind of stuff going on. It's just not something we've really seen out of this team, and I think that's an identity issue that maybe Cliff Kingsbury needs to address with this team. I'm not killing them off yet at 21-0, because Ty, I think you're absolutely right. We've had a lot more volatility. We saw this a little bit in baseball too when analytics first started to get big, as we saw a lot more of those where games where somebody was down 8-1 and before that everyone just quit. It was like, oh, okay, well, we'll play out the string even if the string is six innings. Like, bummer for you if this is the game you bought tickets to. Welcome to all of our worst mop-up relievers. Enjoy. there is a little bit of a swing back the other way, and we see more of those comebacks, and I think it's really even more prevalent in football, which is interesting because we have so much less data to support maybe doing that in football because it's so primitive at this point, what we know. It's kind of great, right? Like, just the idea that it would suggest, and, you know, even if is not just about, well, the Cardinals, the kind of team who has it in them. I mean, that's part of it, certainly, and I'm the first person to kind of question that, and I like Cliff, and I love Kyler, but we haven't seen a great performance out of them over the course of the second half of this season in that regard. They just look a little bit flat. They look flat out of the gate. They look flat when they get behind. And that hasn't changed much. But that being said, yeah, I mean, by just sort of general NFL standards and the fact that this is do or die, I mean, if there was ever a point to kind of wake up and do it, it's now, right? Because you're out if you don't. So maybe we'll get a game. I don't think 21 points is in any way insurmountable for Cliff and Kyler.
Yeah, I mean, we're even watching, like, this has been like two plays were positive, and this has already been the Cardinals' best offensive drive. So if you're able to score here, even get three on the board, I mean, we're not quite at 28-3 yet, for Patriots and Falcons fans. We're not quite at, like, worst ever, you know, comeback margin. But if they're going to do this, that was almost another pick, and then it was back in the hands of the Cardinals receiver. That was insane. It was almost David Long Jr. again, who just got almost a second pick, but it really bounced off his hands into Rondell Moore's hands after bouncing off Rondell's Moore hand the first time. So, like, stuff like that, A, aids you, but B, also, again, like, I'm almost going to say I agree with Samantha that they don't have the moxie, but they also, I don't think, have the athletes right now. Like, they don't have a dude like Nuke Hopkins to just go downfield. They don't have, like, a stud running back to start, like, you know, putting in his hand, like a Cam Akers, who you can just put in his hand 2 or 3 yards from the line of scrimmage and let him rumble. You've got James Conner. You can run downhill, or you can do what they're doing. And right now, everything they're doing is just to try to mitigate the Rams' pass rush, and it's working for them right now. But then you find yourselves in a shootout with the Rams' offense. So if you're going to take the lead in this game, or if you're going to come back in this game, you 100% need the Rams to start making mistakes, and we are not seeing a Rams team tonight that looks like.
Well, that's good, because right now I am still I am restarting my cable box. I have no idea what's going on. Xfinity, where you at? I'm supposed to be going live and describing the action, and this is not working. Obviously, we're not missing a shootout thriller right at this very minute because the Cardinals are so far behind. But I wonder now, let's say they don't make it. You know, they'll probably make it a game, right now the odds that they come back and win, your win probability is extremely low. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk just tweeted, you know, it's hard to see Cliff Kingsbury coming back from this. Like, do we now think this is in firing territory for Cliff Kingsbury if they don't at least make this close?
I'm a no on that. Not yet. I mean, you could make an argument for it, but I think there's too much positive going the other direction for him and too much unknown. And you do, you know, like, there's been certainly some injuries. He's lost a lot of weapons. There's just too many things about this that aren't necessarily 100%. Well, the coach effed up. So I don't know that I think there's any reason to fire him now. I would be shocked if they did. I think he and Kyler certainly have a bond, and I think that matters as well. I would be absolutely stunned if they fired him, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm right there with Samantha. Like, this was the pick of the direction of the franchise. You fired Steve Wilkes after a year because this was like the magic formula that was supposed to do it. And again, I'm going to go back to sort of what I said about the Cowboys, and I actually feel more strongly here than I do about Dallas, but I think both organizations are going to kind of sort of think this way. Like, you've put together a good team. At one point, you were the best team in football this season. You were undefeated heading into, like, December. Like, things went sideways, but you're going to tell yourself, whether it's true or not, they went sideways because we lost our best player. And so you go back and you say, you know, what players do we have to add so that if we lose a J.J. Watt on defense or if we lose a new Hopkins on offense, you know, we can make it happen. I think you have to be able to tell yourself, if you're the Cardinals, that this is an aberration, that this was, you know, a season that went sideways, not a systemic issue. And I think people like Mike Florio have been thinking that it's a systemic issue with Cliff Kingsbury for a long time. And they are not going to come off of that until they're either A, proven right, or proven absolutely wrong. And they might be right. Like, I'm not saying I disagree with them, but I'm not saying there's anything truthfully that's proven that Cliff Kingsbury is the dude. I just think that at one point this season, they were the best team in football, and you don't turn your back on that after all of the decades of just complete mediocre football that this franchise...
I think it's tough because this is specifically Kyler Murray not play very well. Like you said, Shadi, that when your offensive line is getting torched like this, you don't have Nuke Hopkins, who has absolutely been both your safety blanket and your most explosive weapon. I don't know how something can be both a safety blanket and explosive, but Nuke Hopkins has been that for he's a sword and a shield, all that sort of stuff. But this is still, this is the signature guy. This is the formula. It's Cliff Kingsbury. It's Kyler Murray. It's the magic of them together that made them worth both going and getting and putting together. And I think you're right that it's this is better than most teams have it, right? And that's what I said in the middle of the year too, when they started to hit, and they hit that was a 4-game losing streak after going undefeated for so long. Like, hey, this is right. They're ahead of most of the teams in the NFL just by having the head coach right and the quarterback right. And you don't have to cash in this year. The Rams have to cash in this year. And that's what I said on Key Takeaways this morning. That's what I said last week going into this, is that the Rams absolutely need to win this year. You've got Odell Beckham out there. You've got Von Miller out there. You've got Eric Weddle out there. And those are all guys you picked up in the middle of the year. That's not even really the all-in push, because all-in push is trading your starting quarterback plus a whole slew of draft picks for somebody else's other starting quarterback and going, we've got to make this work. So I expected Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford and the Rams to give everything they've got. And like Samantha said, I expected that to kind of work maybe right off the bat. But I also expected there to be something in the chamber for Arizona. I expected something special to be drawn up. I expected them to be able to scheme something going. And right now, there just isn't anything going. All right, guys, before I kick it back over to you, I do have signal again. I am watching the actual game in live speed. They just showed 6 of 14 for 22 yards and 2 interceptions with 2 minutes and 46 seconds left to play in the first half. That is a brutal stat line. All right, guys, it's, of course, again, you know, we've got 18 minutes left in our hour. If things are popping, we can go a little bit long. But anybody out there, Xfinity Man, I see you out there. Great to see you again this week. Any questions, either in the chat or if you want to come on stage, you know, and come out of the audience, definitely let us know. Hit that button, and we will talk about it. In the meantime, we're going to continue NFL talk. You know, I think for me, let's continue to operate under the assumption that the Rams finish this off. Does this change either of your mind about their likelihood, you know, going forward for the rest of this bracket? You know, you got the Niners going up against Green Bay. Like, are the Rams more likely to keep going and get to the championship game with this show?
I think I'm a no on that. I mean, they would face Tampa Bay. They have played Tampa Bay already this season. Yeah. They beat them. That actually makes me less confident. I don't think Tampa's going to let them get them twice. There's some stuff going on with the Bucs that we could talk about. Like, that Wirfs injury is really bothering me. I think that's going to be a problem. I don't know that it necessarily means that Tom can't beat the Rams. And I'm saying Tom because I think that is a huge part of it. That Tom Brady is not going to let them beat him twice, and he's sure as heck not going to let him beat him in January. So, unfortunately, I think it's the wrong path for them. I think you could make an argument for them going into Green Bay and getting a victory, or certainly if they were going up against San Francisco. I don't know, that hasn't gone great for them either. It's a bad, okay, maybe you could beat Green Bay. It doesn't feel very likely either. So I'm talking myself out of even the little chance I gave to the Rams. So yeah, I think they're just unfortunately kind of an also-ran in this one. With no disrespect to the Rams, I would love to see them get further. I think it would be super fun if they upset Tampa next week, just because it would be hilarious and awesome. But I don't think so. I don't like it matchup-wise. I don't like it narrative-wise. I don't think they are the more talented team. No, I can't do it. I can't. I tried to talk myself into it. I can't do it.
If they play like this, they can beat anybody. Like, they are the more talented team if they play like this. If you've got Aaron Donald and Von Miller, you know, they just showed Raheem Morris on the screen. He's got more toys to play with than anyone this side of Richie Rich. Like, he's got just a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball to play with. And right now, like, you're watching a good NFL offense. This wasn't a bad offense all season long. And even without Nuke Hopkins, they were still able to do some things right. Yes, this was a team that lost to the Detroit Lions. Yes, this was a team that really finished the season poorly. But they've not looked this bad offensively for a long, long time. And the Rams are just playing with him at this point. Like, Kyler Murray is standing in the pocket for roughly 2 seconds and just sort of trying to heave the ball towards, you know, the least amount of coverage, because he's seeing pressure and they're bringing pressure from all angles. And can you do this to Aaron Rodgers? Probably not. But can you beat Aaron Rodgers in a shootout? I think you can. I think you can beat Tom Brady in a shootout, especially because that Tampa Bay team continues to be pretty banged up. I say this as David Long Jr., who's got one and almost two picks tonight, is down with an injury. I think the Rams are going to go just about as far as the Rams allow them to go. I don't think there's a team, whether it's the 49ers, the Packers, the Bucks, who straight up 100% against 100%, I don't think there's a team that beats the Rams. I think all season long we've watched the Rams fall down flat too many times for me to trust them. So I'm right there with Samantha. I'm saying no. But I think if the Rams can play like this, then sure. Like, of course I can see it happening. I just don't trust it to happen. And that's why I picked the Cardinals in this game. I'm surprised it's going the way it's going, because I'm just still where I've been all season long, waiting for the Rams to fall flat. Because we've seen this too many times, whether it's been other super teams, whether it's seen teams led by Matthew Stafford, or whether it's just been, you know, high-powered offenses like the Rams are put together, that eventually there are just... You put them up against enough good teams, and eventually it wears out. Someone's got you. Whether it's obviously not Vance Joseph, but if it's a Todd Bowles, or it's a, you know, if it's Green Bay's plucky defense or whatever it is, or if it's, you know, Nick Bosa-led defense in San Francisco, you just put up a great offense like this against enough good defenses, eventually things fall flat. We're not seeing it here tonight, but we have seen it plenty with the Rams.
I don't trust their secondary either. I think Aaron Rodgers would absolutely torch the secondary. They're not very good. And they beat basically one good team during the regular season. So, not sold.
Yeah, I get that. And you guys know, you've heard me say it more than anybody else. I was all in on the Rams in like May. I was all in on the Rams in August, in September, in October, in November. And I believe this is the kind of game that they can play. The question has been consistency, especially on offense. You know, and right now it's the defense that's doing it, because they're feeling their oats. They're pinning their ears back. They're blowing past the Cardinals' offensive line and Kyler, whether they get to Kyler or not, Kyler's feeling it and seeing it and reacting. And that they can do that when they're playing with a lead too, right? But it's the consistency on offense. Like, how quickly do they get out of that lead? Does Matthew Stafford have to throw a couple of picks like Kyler Murray threw tonight in order to kind of shake off the rust and wake up? But we're here, guys. It's 12 minutes to the bottom of the hour, and there's still 2 minutes left in this half. We had the injury timeout with Long Jr., but like this has been a long, long first half in every way, shape, and form for Arizona, and they just punt away. They didn't get past their own 20, still in the shadow of their own end zone. And now here come the Rams with one more chance to score. I want to give you all out there one more chance if you want to ask any questions. And it doesn't have to be about Rams Cardinals. It doesn't have to be about playoff teams. It could be about your favorite team, whoever that is. Clickboy bailed a little while ago. I think, sadly, just as we started talking about the Cowboys, I don't think Clickboy is in a great spot mentally based on the chat exchange. Like, and I don't blame him. It's tough. If you're a Cowboys fan and you've been waiting, you know, if you're like 22, you've been waiting your whole life for this, right? That's something we don't think about enough. And I always try and keep in mind when we're talking to fans. We're talking
oh,
to
I
people.
Have something to say about this.
Go ahead.
I don't want to hear from anyone who won a Super Bowl 20 years ago about how oppressed they are, how terrible things are for them. The NFL is full of fan bases who haven't won a Super Bowl at all, ever. So, yeah, I mean, do I get why you're sad? Of course. But this whole, oh, we're so dedicated, we've suffered so much. Shut up. No. If you've won a Super Bowl at all as a Cleveland fan, I don't want to hear from you. It's not that I'm not sympathetic to you when you lose, but this we're so long-suffering angle is so obnoxious, and it just really betrays your ignorance of sort of what, like, things are like across the whole league. Like, to be sad when you lose, even if you won last year, is absolutely fine. I totally get it. But to act as though you are somehow like the greatest martyr in the NFL because you're rooting for the Cowboys, and this was a huge problem. And I heard this from a couple of more reasonable Cowboy fans today who were talking about their own fan base, who said they were pretty embarrassed that so many of them were going down that path. But yeah, this is just gross. Like, please educate yourself on where your team is relative to other teams. And you are absolutely allowed to be sad and angry and disappointed about it. But please don't pretend as though your suffering is either unique or paramount to the suffering of others, especially if you're a Cowboys fan, because you're going to get smacked back by a whole lot of fan bases who've had it way worse than you.
Yeah, unless you've had to, like, live out of market and the only chance of you ever seeing your team play is, like, inviting a computer virus onto your computer to stream it illegally. Like, unless that's your life, you're not oppressed as a fan. If you've got, like, 27 primetime games every single year, you're not oppressed as a fan. If you've been to the playoffs and, you know, had Tony Romo as your quarterback, you are not oppressed as a fan. Like, I had Ty Detmer. You know, go screw yourself. Like, this is, you know... There's so many fan bases out there, and we're starting to see this a little bit from Pittsburgh. You know, starting to see this a little bit from Seattle. Like, when you're used to everything, I understand that's a different type of quote unquote oppression. The word Samantha used, or a different type of ennui. Just, you know, when you're used to being good, it sucks to not be on the mountaintop anymore. But at the same time, there are so many of us who've never even seen the mountain. Like, just go screw yourself. Like, we do not care. You are not sad. You are just...
Yeah, I almost called out friend of the show, Jarrett Bailey, on the big show last week when we brought him on to talk about what's it like being a Steelers person, as literally every person in the world is cheering for your team to get knocked out of the playoffs via a tie. And he tried to pull a little bit, oh, it's been such a hard season, especially for Steelers fans. I'm like, you have more Super Bowl rings than you can wear on one hand. You don't get to complain that you're downtrodden. But I will say this. You know, you get raised up here in Lions fan land with, like, son, this is the Lions. If I could not root for them, I would. Save yourself the heartache. They will always disappoint you. And, like, but if you're, you know, 25, 28, maybe even 30, and you grew up in Cowboys land, and you grew up, it's like, you know, daughter, this is the Cowboys. We win the Super Bowl every year. And then, like, all the TV people every year talk about how you're going to win the Super Bowl and what are the odds of winning the Super Bowl. And, like, and then you literally never win a playoff game. Like, that's got to mess with you in its own special, different way. And I think you're right, Smith. It's really not comparable in terms of suffering. And as a Lions fan, I know it very, very well. But you have that. You know, we were talking to Nui Scruggs last month, and I was like, you know, is winning the NFC East, walking away and having, you know, a 1 or 2 seed and hosting a playoff game, is that going to satisfy Cowboys fans? And he was like, no, they're going to be like, whatever, win the division. Like, absolutely not. You know, this team's expectations are completely out of scale. Like, the fan base's expectations are completely out of joint with, like, what they've achieved or what the actual results have been, or what reasonable expectations might be. They expect to be doing things they haven't done since 1995. And it's again, it's a different kind of ennui, but it's not. It's not totally
No, it's totally invalid. You need to know the hit. If you are 28 years old, you don't have any. You're not like 14. Like, you don't have any excuse for, like, not knowing the history of the league and your team and all that. Like, I'm sorry, you haven't seen one. Like, my dad hasn't seen one. And he's been alive since before the Browns joined the NFL. So, like, no. No, absolutely not. No, this is like Yankee fan territory right here, where they're like, it's like the standards that the rest of us use are very different. And I think that's fine. I don't really have any issue with them being disappointed when they don't win every year. That's mostly something I look at. Like, that must be nice. You know, I would love to be in a position where I was like super pissed if I got knocked out in like the second round of the playoffs and went, that isn't good enough because, you know, I've got 800 World Series rings or Super Bowl rings or what have you. That would be a great problem to have, and I am not begrudging people being angry about that. It's the, like, no, please understand what suffering means, and please stop putting yourself up on a pedestal that says we suffer harder than anyone else, because there are just too many fans out there who can make an outstanding slam dunk case for why that is not true.
This is like when Twitter was new, when Twitter was fresh. And, like, the most annoying thing on Twitter was when sports writers would complain about airport stuff or plane stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's wait a second. You're complaining because the guy in front of you tilted his seat back. You're paid to fly to NFL games every
week. Still happens. Some of them are still doing it. Like, they take photos of their seat. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yeah. No. Like, I am so mad because the restaurant I like in this concourse is closed for repairs. Like, dude, that is a first world problem. Like, this is the sports equivalent fan or sports fan equivalent of a first world problem. Like, if you think that you are oppressed as a Ravens fan or a Seahawks fan or a Cowboys fan, you're just not. I mean, heck, even as a Bears fan, like, I hear really whiny Bears fans, and Bears fans, like, you go to the playoffs like 2 out of every 5 years, you have gotten a Super Bowl recently. You know, you're generally considered one of the best teams in the best franchises in the NFL for the most part. Like, you don't get to be mad that, you know, your franchise that is basically run on spit and baling wire finally had, you know, roosters come home to roost. Like, it happens. Like, welcome to the show. Like, for much of our history, Raiders fans have been Vikings fans have been right there. Lions fans have been right there. Like, just because you're not on the same level as the Packers for, like, the last couple of years, you're complaining about it? I don't think so. Like, you know, try to live as a Browns fan. Try to live as a Bengals fan. Try to live as a Jaguars fan, for heaven's sake. It's just different, and your first world problems do not matter.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna come to the rescue of Cowboys fans. And I almost wonder if it's harder sometimes to be like a smart Cowboys fan, like a good, passionate Cowboys
Who?
Fan.
Who? Show me
that's
one.
Well educated.
Show me one. Who?
One of my best friends is actually a smart Cowboys fan. And he is constantly in a state of, I don't know, it's a combination of like embarrassment and exasperation of like, why won't these people listen to my reason? Which of course they won't, because of course they won't. But yeah, I mean, I think he feels like he's very much out there all alone. I mean, he spends a lot of time like reasoning with his own father during Cowboys games and failing miserably. So yeah, I think there's a handful of them out there, but they unfortunately are not in a position to take over for a whole bunch of people who are deeply invested in a sort of a folie à deux, if you will, the mutually shared delusion that they're all too happy to participate in.
I just need to draw this out because there is a huge juxtaposition on my TV screen. Because right now they're doing the new trailer for Moon Knight, the new Marvel show on Disney Plus. But right before that, now this show is being billed as like very trippy, very mind-bendy, and the trailer is showing all of that. But right before this was a commercial for Judge Steve Harvey. And what kind of mind rape is that? Like, what did you just do to me? Like, Judge Steve Harvey? What are we doing? Like, I thought that was a parody commercial. Like, I thought that was going to, like, go into something else.
Wait, that was real?
Yeah, like, I thought that was going to be, like, a progressive commercial. Like, of course this is a bad idea. You know, get by Allstate or something like that. Like, how is that a show? Why? What? Who is signing up to let Steve Harvey?
Yikes.
I don't know. And of course now we're getting the like super trippy Oscar Isaac, like Egypt temple Dune. Okay. Superhero like stuff happening right now. But yeah, no, the Judge Steve Harvey thing is absolutely mystifying to me because they're not even doing the, you know, Judge Mills, like it doesn't, they're not making him wear a robe. They're not pretending. You know, they're not pretending he legally is a judge, but at the same time, I don't understand what this is. And of all the neutral arbiters in terms of TV personalities, you're like, you know, who's fair? Who calls it like he sees them? You know, who's got good takes on things in general? How far down the list of qualified TV presenters do you have to get pre? What, Steve Harvey?
The end. You get to the end, and Steve Harvey is somehow lower.
Maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe they went to the bottom of the list, and that's where they started.
This was an SNL sketch that got rejected because it was too ridiculous, and ABC was like, "We got it. We got to go."
I thought it was like a sitcom at first. Like, oh, okay, this judge, and then
he goes home.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. It. I see it. Yeah.
That's what I thought. But no.
I wouldn't watch that either. For the record, I wouldn't watch
me,
that.
Me neither. Me neither. But it does feel vaguely more marketable than this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, notably, okay, now he hosted Family Feud for all that time, but he's just asking questions and making fun of people when they answer. I mean, let's not forget this is also the guy that read the wrong name.
I mean, that's where I'm getting stuck. Like, if you can't read a cue card or a teleprompter or whatever, do I really want you, like, helping me, like, you know, into legally binding life decisions? Probably not.
Absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. Okay, so it's still halftime. We haven't come back. There's nothing new to talk about. The Rams, so far, running away with it. Cardinals have the you know, mojo to maybe make a game of it at some point in theory on paper, but we'll have to believe that when we see it. We're not going to see it because our show is wrapping up. But I wanted to tell you guys, another life, years and years and years ago, I worked briefly at a sports memorabilia store because my best friend was managing. And I was like, all right. He's like, oh man, I need help with like the holiday rush. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, I'll call. And so it was great because we got to have a bunch of like, you know, massive sports nerd moments with people coming in and you know, asking questions. I got like 3 years of like retail movie script material working at this sports memorabilia shop for like 4 weeks. But one of them was this guy comes in and he's like 5'6" and like classic swole 5'6". Napoleon complex, like I'm gonna be like Mr. King Alpha guy because I'm short and I have to prove to everyone that I'm the manliest man in the room in every room I go into, right? And so he starts talking and like we can tell right away like this is a, like This guy does not know football, but he's trying to like pick our brains, like the guys behind the counter, about football. And you know, it's just like it's going sideways. And he starts, you know, spouting off all these terrible opinions about the Lions. He goes, "Of course, I don't even root for the Lions anyway." And the guy I was working with goes, "Oh yeah, who do you root for?" And he goes, "Cowboys." And we both lock eyes over his head, like, there we go. Like, if you had said before answer, like, hold on, let me guess, that's what I would have guessed. And like, that's the in my mind since that has been the prototypical, like, okay, you know, that is a huge chunk of the Cowboys fan base. And if that is you do not get to be, you do not get to be griping that you lost this game.
I mean, that's perfect, though. That's just exactly who it is. That this small man complex who would come into a, oh yeah, I could see this guy in my
Yeah, oh
head,
yeah,
and he's absolutely the guy. You're like, I'll give me one guess:
if this was like a
Cowboys,
police
Yankees,
sketch,
Lakers.
right. If we had like a police sketch thing,
Yes.
you draw the guy, I'll be like, that's the guy. You know, exactly.
Absolutely, with his Cowboy starter jacket over his Lakers
Yes,
jersey and the Yankee hat.
100%. Shadi,
Perfect.
were you gonna jump in on that?
I was gonna say exactly what Samantha just said, but he's probably got like a Notre Dame necklace. He's got
Yes.
like a cloverleaf
Yeah.
necklace to.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. All right, you guys, we've got lots more to get to, but later this week, of course, we've got a big show lined up for you guys. Got another big guest. We're gonna, you know, break down all of the divisional round games, pick straight up and against the spread, courtesy of pickwatch.com. This show is going to go into our feed. So any of the questions or things that we talked about, you're going to hear that on Three and Out. Of course, that's Three and Out on Twitter. It's called Three Out Pod. Same thing on Instagram, Three Out Pod. You want to go to our website where all the episodes and stuff we write go up there. It's threeoutpod.com. Same thing. Make sure you guys are following. Make sure you've got the notifications turned on here on the Halftime app and on Twitter so you can check out all the stuff we're doing. You don't miss anything here on Three and Out, your national NFL podcast.